Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Great to have you along. Looking forward to a good hour together. As always, we talk about ways we can apply biblical principles to daily life. Try and look at the world from a biblical perspective. And always glad to have you join the conversation, be a part of it. You can do that, of course, with a phone call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484, or online. Go to myfaithradio.com, click on the Connecting Faith show page, and you can just use the email link there and send us a note. Ted Ross at the controls, looking at shirts. Shirt doing okay?
Yeah, I don't know. I got like, I think I blew my nose and I got Kleenex right now. Cleaning up here, a little behind the scenes that you didn't need to know.
Sure, that's right. Yes, okay. Closed circuit to Ted. So something on your shirt there, bud. Anyway.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a real show here. We get down to the real issues.
That's right.
So, which is what we're going to do today. I think we have a great discussion. Looking forward to introducing our guest and learning more about his life and faith journey. Because we're talking changing faith today. Subtitle of the new book from our guest is called Questions, Doubts, and Choices About an Unchanging God. And I think, you know, there are times today when, you know, maybe throughout life, too, we've wondered, all right, can I claim that everything is 100% true that I believe? And maybe I don't really understand it all. And is it okay to have doubts as a follower of Christ? We're going to get some perspective today from Michael Hidalgo, who is the lead pastor at Denver Community Church. And it's a church that has grown significantly. It started with group of about 40 people or so and several thousand now. And with the One Campaign and Malaria No More, Michael has addressed thousands nationally. He's the author of a couple books, including Unlost, Being Found by the One We're Looking For. Writes regularly for Relevant Magazine, and he and his wife and three children live in the Denver, Colorado area. And we were just talking about, you know, the sky, I assume, is still blue beyond belief, right? Michael, is that right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes. It's nice and sunny today.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, just...
You're a little closer to the sky there, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. So maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. We just... And I was... Because the pictures never do it justice. You take a picture and go, well, that, you know, it doesn't even look real. So, but... All right. So, you know, there are times probably when, you know, we look to the sky and we're looking with questions like, why? What's going on? And I know that... if you've grappled with some of these questions, you'll want to hang around for today's conversation. Michael, maybe just say a word about the book, maybe why it came about for you. Is it something that you wrestled with doubts over your course of time? I mean, you've not been a pastor forever, but share a little bit about the reason for this book.
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me. I'm excited for the conversation that we're going to have. And for me, the book came about because as I traveled and spoke in different places and had conversations with people from our church here in Denver and people who would not consider themselves Christians here in Denver, it was interesting to see that there were so many questions that were parallel from around the country and from people who are both in the church and outside the church. And when I started to notice that pattern, I started writing down and kind of documenting the conversations that I had with people, and eventually got such a big stack of note cards, I thought, I think this might be a book. And if this is what so many people are talking about, then maybe this is something that we should write about. And it's not a book of new answers, but in this time and day and age in which we live that feels like everything's kind of in flux, it's really giving direction in the midst of what can feel like confusion.
And there's no question we're in a time of flux, it seems like. But let's talk about doubt right from the start. I mean, is that a common aspect of human existence, do you think?
Yeah, I do. I think, you know, it's interesting. Some scholars say that half of the book of Psalms are psalms of lament, in which there's people saying, you know, hey, God, why are you standing far off? Why are you not listening to me? Why, you know, really... In our modern phrase, it would be, why are you deaf? And it's interesting. They're not saying, God, it feels like you're deaf. they're saying, God, why are you deaf? There's this assumption that he is. And it's an expression that they have of doubt. But I think the beauty of it is they're expressing that doubt to God, which actually shows in a very interesting way a lot of trust in him. I trust you enough to tell you I'm struggling here. And I do think we see that tradition that's thousands of years old. And I often talk to people about my kids. I have three kids. And as I watch them grow, the more they grow and the more they mature, the more significant and deep their questions become. And so as we grow in our faith, questions, struggles, God, why this? That seems to actually be a natural progression as we deepen our relationship with God.
In the chapter you're talking about, From Knowing to Unknowing, you make the statement that you say, you know, doubt is essential to our faith. That sort of arrested my attention when I read that. Say more about that.
Yeah, I talk about, I think it was a story when I was in high school, I was trying to find a friend's house. And it was like before GPS and before cell phones. And I was confident, I acted confident with everybody in the car that I knew where I was going. And it wasn't until I admitted I was lost, that I didn't know what was going on, that I was actually able to get directions and found out I was a half hour away from my friend's house. And part of that is when we finally make our doubt known, when we finally say, I'm struggling with this, it's at that point that we can begin to grapple and wrestle with deeper things. And I think doubt is, we're in one area of life, everything seems to work. And as we grow and as we move forward, that area that we are in no longer seems to work. I spoke at a camp this summer filled with middle schoolers. And there's this sense like when I was 12, middle school was great. When I'm in my late 30s and I look at middle schoolers, I'm like, what in the world is going on here? And so there was a point in my life where I was like, this isn't working anymore. And again, it's that natural growth. And I think when we're honest about questions and doubts and struggles, it actually pushes us forward. It pushes us deeper. And that's what I mean by that statement, that it's essential to faith and essential to helping us grow.
Well, maybe if you're grappling with some of the questions, the big questions of life, you want to join our conversation today and talk to Pastor Michael Hidalgo from Denver Community Church, author of the book Changing Faith, Questions, Doubts, and Choices About an Unchanging God. Our number is 877-93-FAITH. Are there some aspects of our faith that maybe we don't need to have 100% certainty over? Because isn't that kind of one of the questions maybe in the modern world today? Well, I can't believe with certainty this religious thing.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to note the definition of faith given by the writer of Hebrews. It's assurance of things that we can't see, or literally, it's knowing for certain things that we can't understand. And so faith is almost this paradox. I can't prove it. I can't do a bunch of experiments that will lead you or me to a conclusion. And I think what, in that sense, it's actually quite freeing. And at the other level, it's quite demanding. And when I say it's demanding, is because the deepest proof I think that people are looking for in our world today is, do you believe in Jesus enough? Do you believe in God enough? Do you trust the scriptures enough to actually live out what you say you believe? And it's really hard to argue with a life that is lived well. And so when it comes to this certainty, I think the question we have to ask ourselves first and foremost is, am I assured of this enough that I'm actually going to live out the commands and the ways of Jesus? And if we are at that place, then I think at some level we have all the certainty we need going forward.
One of the things that as I was reading your book, I was reminded of again that, you know, the reality that God desires that we know him and he's always moving toward us. I mean, that should encourage us or at least inform our influence our questions and doubts, shouldn't it?
Oh, for sure. Because I think we're not in a... It's not up to us, I'll say it that way. You know, when we think about the renewal and the redemption that God is doing in our lives and in the lives of others, sometimes, especially for those like me who've grown up in the church, we have this burden of like, oh, we have to do more, we have to do more. And I think if Jesus was here, he might just be going, hey, why don't you trust me more? Because God is more faithful than any of us. And what he is doing in the lives of people and in our world and in bringing this reconciliation, as Paul talks about in Colossians 1, this reconciliation to all, through all things, Paul tells us he's doing it in and through Christ. And so we actually get to join him in it. So our work then becomes a joy. It becomes this opportunity. It becomes a way of life versus this burden and this drudgery. And I think if we can begin shifting our focus and realizing, like, this demands big-time trust and faith in God versus this is a heavy burden laid on us, we're going to live a life that's far more free.
We're going to talk more about living life free instead of the oughts and the shoulds. So we'll hear a little bit more about Michael Hidalgo's story, his growing up years, and some of the doubts and questions that he's gone through, and some of the answers that he's provided for us in the book Changing Faith: Questions, Doubts, and Choices About an Unchanging God. We have a number of copies of the book to give away. This would be a good resource for you, and then something to pass on to a friend. They're going to address a number of issues, you know, from certainty to probability, from words to experience, from being right to being faithful, from power to truth, from legalism to wholeness, from toil to work, and much more. We'll get to those questions, doubts, and choices about an unchanging God in the moments ahead. You'd like to join the conversation? Sign up for a free copy of the book. It's 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484. And more with Pastor Michael Hidalgo in just a moment. The hour, and talking today about doubts, questions, and choices about an unchanging God. Maybe you've had some of the questions. How can we actually know about God in our world? Who's right? Who's wrong? Are right and wrong even the best categories for our world anymore? Whose truth is really true? Do I need God to live a life that matters? Those are some of the questions that our guest has addressed in his new book called Changing Faith: Questions, Doubts, and Choices About an Unchanging God. It's from University Press and written by Michael Hidalgo, who is lead pastor at Denver Community Church. And he's authored several books, and he's writes regularly for Relevant Magazine, and is with us today as we talk about some of these questions. Maybe before we, you know, maybe address some of the specifics, I'm wondering, should we expect answers? Job never received any answers, so is that something that we should expect to receive answers?
Yeah, Job received questions, which is just a brilliant ending to the book. And I don't know that we should expect answers. And I say that from the standpoint that on this past Sunday, I spoke with a couple in our church, and they're coming up to the one-year anniversary of the death of their three-year-old daughter. And we prayed for her. We prayed over her. We laid hands on her. I mean, like, and this is a family who has this deep, abiding peace and love for Jesus. And so I look at them, nothing is ever going to answer the question of why their daughter died. And I think if we get to a place where we say, okay, it's going to demand that we trust, not that we know. That's where we're going to be on a path of finding greater connection and peace with God. Because that's what happens with Job. God asks Job a million questions. And at the end, Job says, my ears have heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you. And so I place my hand over my mouth. And there's this sense of, I can't even begin to explain who you are, but now that I have a glimpse of who you are, I don't need to explain it. And I wonder if that's what God wants, is this deep intimacy, like the relationships you have with human beings that you can't fully explain because they're so rich and deep and beautiful.
Does the church allow for that, or does it sort of downplay or discourage doubt? And maybe just out of your experience, we have the notorious Doubting Thomas. We even named him Doubting Thomas. But I mean,
yeah, it's interesting. Luke tells us that all of the disciples doubted, And Matthew tells us the same thing. So Matthew tells us that when Jesus is ascending, it says some of them worshiped and some, not one, but some doubted. Luke tells us that when the women went to the tomb and found that Jesus was resurrected, they went back to the disciples and told them, and it says the disciples believed their words were nonsense. And so the difference between Thomas and the rest of them is Thomas actually had the guts to talk about it, to say, like, I don't think this has really happened. And the thing that I love about it is when Jesus encounters Thomas, he doesn't, like, roll his eyes and be like, dang it, Thomas. Like, come on, man. Don't you? Instead, he says, hey, put your hands where in my wounds. Put your hand in my side. In other words, what if this is what you need to get you by, to get you beyond this doubt, I'm going to give it to you. And I think in my experience growing up, doubt was frowned upon. You were supposed to be firm in your faith, and you were supposed to be absolute and certain. And what I've learned is that the people who are the most firm in their faith are the ones asking questions about it. It's kind of like our closest relationships, humanly speaking. The closer the relationship, the more willing we are to say to someone we love, hey, I'm not sure this is right. I'm not sure you're behaving correctly. I'm not sure you and I are in a good place, because we trust the relationship. And so I think if we're willing to, like Thomas, say, I'm really struggling to believe this, we stand to inherit what Thomas did, which was an encounter with Jesus that nobody else had. And I wonder if we were just more honest, maybe we would have those encounters with God, with Jesus, with others, of Jesus saying, hey, if what you need is to touch the wounds, then that's what I'll do for you.
You address, kind of made me laugh just reading about, and I guess you sort of alluded to it, just finding your way directions. But you know, the fact is that now with Google, we know everything all the time, at any time, right? I mean, we're never more than just a click or two away from finding the answers to something. But that doesn't help with the sort of the unanswerable mystery part of it, does it?
It doesn't. And I quote one of my favorite comedians, a guy named Pete Holmes, who says, we have Google on our phones, and it's ruining our lives because we know everything, and we're not a lick smarter for it. And so I think there is that reality of, I want someone to Google the word love and then come and explain it to me. Like, the reality is, the reason why when somebody says, how do I know when I'm in love? The age-old answer is, you just do. Because ultimately, it's something that you can't explain it. You have to feel it. If somebody said to me, I want to understand what love is, I would probably go and find, like, this mother who just dotes on her kids, or this old couple who's been through thick and thin and have been married 60 years, and say, just sit and watch them, and then you'll start to figure it out. Because some things you can't Google. I have a friend who says the heaviest things in the world can't be weighed. And I think there is this sense of, like, the glory of God. Like, this is why you see people falling down, and they don't say anything. Because there's some things you just can't explain, and you only can feel them and know them deep in your heart. And I think this is why God is always talking about knowing him and intimacy, is because he wants us to go beyond this intellectual, yes, I get it, to this deep, abiding love, a relationship that, like, when Bill Bright was asked about Jesus, he started crying. Like, that's what I want. I want when people say to me, how do you feel about Jesus? For my eyes to fill up with tears, because I can't actually Google it or talk about it or give you info.
Well, tell me a little more about your story, because there was a time in your life where that probably you weren't at that place, right? I mean, even though you'd gone to Christian school and college, share a bit about your journey.
Yeah, I grew up, my parents became Christians not long before I was born. And so from my earliest memories in church, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, I think my parents, like, volunteered on every committee, so probably also, like, on Thursday and Friday night. And we lived on the East Coast, and then my family moved to Michigan. And that was when I was in my early teen years. And I was able, even though I was young, to see a distinct difference between the faith of the people that we knew in New York and the faith of the people that we knew in Michigan. And all of a sudden, I was like, wait, if this is the same God and the same Jesus, then why do people have different rules and different ways of worshiping and different attitudes about the church? And I just kind of wholesale bailed on the whole thing. I just didn't, it didn't do anything for me. Faith was just about obeying a bunch of rules. And I was never good at obeying those rules. So I was the kid that my people in my church were always praying for. And so for me, I walked away. And what really began to speak to me and bring me back was like, no, this is not just about living a moral life and obeying a certain list of rules that somebody somewhere has said you're supposed to obey. This is about actually allowing God to seep into every single area of your life and to bring healing to those relationships that have been deeply damaged, to lead you past all the fear and insecurity and anxiety that you live with day in and day out, to bring you so much hope about today that tomorrow, as Jesus said, will take care of itself, to recognize that there is hope not just in our death, but also in our life. And so as I began to wake up to the call of Jesus, which was not, hey, you need to do this, but hey, follow me, like imitate me. I'm not going to lay anything on you that's heavy or ill-fitting. Like, I want to work with you. I want you to work with me. I want you to be a part of what I'm doing. It radically reoriented my life. And that didn't happen until after college. And it really came out as a result of my finally meeting somebody who was willing to not judge me because of my doubts and questions, but to listen to my questions and guide me through them.
Maybe that you are at a place where you have some questions and would like someone to listen to those as well and engage in the conversation. We'd welcome you to come on board today during the hour as we talk with Michael Hidalgo, who's the lead pastor at Denver Community Church. And it's a church that has grown to thousands after just getting started with 40 or so people. And Michael has written a wonderful book called Changing Faith: Questions, Doubts, and Choices About an Unchanging God. And we're going to get to some issues about how do we work through some of the hurts and disillusionments and anger, and when we think God is to blame, and talk a little bit about a person trying to shut out the very idea of God. Maybe you know somebody like that. You'd like to get some answers. We'll talk about it here as we talk Changing Faith. You can join the conversation at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. And we'll continue in a moment.
Promises, 'cause I don't know what's safe. Oh, me of little faith.
Now you might feel that you're in that spot too. The faith is small, and you have doubts. How do you deal with those questions, those doubts, and those choices? We know that God is unchanging, but is it okay if our faith should change? In fact, our faith should be growing and expanding and changing. What does that look like in the midst of the world in which we live? Changing Faith is the title of a new book from Michael Hidalgo, who's pastor at Denver Community Church, lead pastor there. We've got copies to give away. It'd be a great resource for you and something you could pass on to a friend who may be wrestling with some of those questions. Here's the number to sign up for a copy. It's 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. And if you have a question or comment, we'd love to have you join the broadcast as well. Michael, I know one of the chapters you talk about is going from being right to being faithful. And I guess picking up on that, the idea of our faith is growing and expanding. But doesn't the world kind of expect us to sort of, quote unquote, grow in our understanding of maybe current behaviors and practices, right? That was, what the Bible said, 2,000, 5,000 years ago, that was then. But we know more now. So talk about that, issues of growing in maybe cultural trends and changes.
Yeah, I think we're living in a time right now of rapid change. I think everyone kind of has accepted that, just from because of technology and all the things that technology has allowed us to do. My wife is a nurse, and she talks about what she was doing 17 years ago compared to today. It's mind-blowing. And so I think we're in a day and age where we're learning more about the world. We're learning more about how the human brain works. Like, there's all sorts of things. And I talk about that in that chapter as an example of saying, as we're living in this time of change, so many people are like, well, okay, what happens to our faith? And so there's this kind of death grip on everything we once held true and held to and said was right. We got to hold on to this, and we've got to make sure that this is what remains. And there are some things where we have to go like, no, there's going to be some things we learn that are going to demand that we trust God in it. And so I talk about Galileo and his belief, which was, hey, you know what? The earth is not the center of the universe. And the church said, you are violating scripture. Done. You're out. And they threatened him with death. And so we're going to be faced with some of those things when it comes to science, when it comes to culture, as you mentioned. And for us, rather than make the mistake the church has already made, which was to tell Galileo he's wrong, and then hundreds of years later have to say, whoops, he was right, and we apologize for threatening him with death, is to say, okay, we need to know the heart of God. What's the heart of God in this? And if we know the heart of God for this world, for people, for individuals, for the issues that are seen to be bombarding us left and right from culture, then what we're going to discover and what we're going to begin working toward is, how do we respond to our world in a way that is faithful to God's heart? And God's heart is one that is geared toward redemption, toward renewal. And so there is that, when I talk about from being right to being faithful, so many of us want to be right about very specific doctrinal issues. And Paul reminds us in 1 Corinthians, like, I can speak with the tongues of men and angels. I can fathom all the mysteries of the deep. But if I do not have love, I am nothing, which means we can be right about everything and have all of the answers and still in some ways be dead wrong.
And we can sort of slip into legalism pretty easily, can't we, as we try and hold on to these truths, or what we, maybe they've just become really rituals and regulations.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's good for us to remember that the religious powers believed that Jesus was wrong. And so that ought to be a wake-up call for us. And I think the thing about Jesus that he was always able to do is, when I talk about reflecting the heart of God, Jesus always seemed to be able to cut through all of the arguments down to the person and remember that there is a living, breathing son or daughter who's made in the image and likeness of God standing before him. And I wonder, when it comes to a lot of the conversations we have, how would our conversations change? Not our opinions or beliefs. How would our conversations, our words, our posture, our attitudes, how would that change if we were able to see people first in the same way that Jesus did, with the same love that he had that compelled him to die, even for the people that hated him?
Talk a little bit more about how change begins when we get awakened to the design God has for us, whether it's in relationships or work. I mean, that is, we really begin to realize that, you know, God is actively involved in our lives, even when we maybe don't fully understand his ways and plans.
Yeah, I think it starts with really just having this posture of open-handed surrender. We're in a culture where we love to control things. So we have our 401ks, we spend time before we're ever given it, we have our schedules, our calendars. You look at the culture of parenting in our country now, the helicopter parenting, where parents now are calling college advisors to help their children plan their college schedule, and calling companies when their child gets hired for their first job to help negotiate the salary package. Like, we love to control. And I think we'd be in a much better place if we started every day by simply saying, like, God, what do you have for me today? Not that we add more, not that we make more events, but maybe saying things like, God, help me to see this world with your eyes today. That when I hear a conversation or my coworker brings up a conversation about something he or she struggles with, that I'm not going to say, I'll pray for you as a way of doing very little, but that I'm actually going to say, I want to talk to you more about that. And it's just, it's simply really, it's like, I think Jesus is really simple and really difficult. We've made Christianity really complex and quite easy. And so I think there is the sense of going, am I willing to simply just surrender, like open my hands up and go, whatever you're going to give me today, God, I'm going to do that. And sooner or later, we're going to figure out we really don't control the outcomes. We don't control our life. We don't control the issues and the problems. But we do have a way to respond to those, filled with peace and grace and hope because of Jesus.
Now, that's one end of the continuum, hopefully where we want to get to, that place of open-handed surrender. But it seems like there's another end of the continuum, which we certainly see a lot more of today, or maybe hear more about it, the person who's trying to shut out the very idea of God, you know, especially God in their lives. Well, that's just, you know, the new atheist, I guess we'd call him. What would you say to that person?
Yeah, you know, last year I was in England, and I met a guy who said to me, you know, well, what do you do? And I said, I'm a pastor. And I've never seen anyone get so flustered in my life when they've heard what I did. It was actually comical. And he said, oh, well, I'm sorry. So I'm an atheist. And so I said, oh, you are? He said, yeah. And I said, well, first, I said, let me say that takes tremendous faith. And second, I'd love to know which God you don't believe in. And he was, first of all, he was taken back that I complimented him about faith. But for me, I look at someone who's an atheist, and I'm like, man, that takes a lot of faith to be able to look at the sunset, to stand by the ocean, or look, like, I live in the mountains. Like, how can you stand on a mountain and shake your head and say, now this is all chance? To see a child be born. Like, I feel like I don't know how you can witness that and say there's no God. So for me, I think affirming them, which sounds counter to what we're doing, but let's not forget in Acts 17, Paul sees the pagans worshiping the unknown God in Athens and says, "This, you're actually worshiping God, you just don't know it yet." That's a paraphrase. So there is that sense of affirming. And then the second question, which God do you not believe in? I believe in a God. I believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I believe in the God of Jesus. I believe that Jesus is fully God and fully man. I believe in a triune God, the God of God the Father, the Son, and the Spirit. So it's interesting when you say to someone who claims to be an atheist, which God do you not believe in? It all of a sudden invites them first to think about their own belief, but then it's second, and it's not a clever thing, but it really tells them, I want to know what you believe. And it's those conversations that open things up, and I think it also releases us from the pressure of having to convert somebody. Remember what Paul wrote. He is the one who planted the seed and Apollos watered, but God gave the growth. And so we can trust when we have these conversations and brief encounters that we don't know what seeds are planted or what's been watered and what God will cause to grow in the future.
Do you use questions often, maybe in those brief encounters? I mean, you've written a book about questions and doubts, but do you use them as a way to help people maybe think through their own their beliefs?
Yeah, I feel like I should respond to that question with a question.
Okay.
yeah, I do. And I think, you know, what I've learned rather quickly is there's two groups of people that our culture has largely stopped listening to, and it's pastors and politicians. And so I'm one half of that. And so when we ask questions, what it tells people, even if you vehemently disagree with them, even if you deeply believe they're wrong, what it does is it says to them, hey, I want to hear what you're about. And just that opens up unbelievable avenues for conversation. It's been said that Jesus was asked 183 questions that are recorded through the four Gospels, and he answers three of them directly. The other ones he answers either with a story that we call parables or with another question. like, good teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And he says, well, what are the commands? How do you read them? It's amazing. And so Jesus is inviting people. When you ask someone a question, you're forcing them back inside their own heart, in their own self. And if you can do that in a way, and as they're talking, you know, we always say at our church, listen to them with one ear and keep another ear on the voice of the Spirit. I think that we need to trust God enough to guide our conversation and guide even those that we disagree with in their conversation and thinking to a place where they can meet and know Him.
And I was thinking it seems like we are, maybe guys especially, are pretty good at compartmentalizing life and faith, sort of maybe just to deal with our doubts. So we put God in a box, if you will, and then assume He doesn't work in certain situations or He can't work in certain situations.
Yeah, and I talk about that. I'm really good at compartmentalizing. I can be the guy that in the midst of the most stressful thing, I can fall asleep easily because I can lock it out. And I think when we do that, to your point, is we now have this like compartment that God's not in. And so you have people, and I've had multiple conversations with people about, well, I don't, like, God's not in my workplace. God's not in my relationship here. God's, and we forget, like, no, God's actually there. It's just whether or not we're going to say, like, yes, you have entrance here or not. I mean, Jesus talks, or I'm sorry, in the book of Revelation, it's, I stand at the door and knock. So God wants to come in, but it's just too often we're not asking God, hey, help me to see with your eyes, help me to hear with your ears, help me to speak with your words. And if we begin to think that way, and if we begin to really ask those questions deeply of what would it look like? What would it look like if I invited God into this relationship, into this secret that I have, into my workplace? I really believe just even asking those questions of ourselves and even praying, Holy Spirit, you're welcome here. Even so, come, Lord Jesus. As we're walking into our offices, we would begin to slowly see things change in the way that we see this world change.
Do you think there's an openness to ask those questions, to be willing, or have we sort of decided that we'll just, you know, faith is a personal thing, and that it works for you doesn't work for me, and so we don't actually maybe get below the surface sometimes, be willing to ask some hard questions?
Yeah, what I've discovered in my experiences here in Denver, we're right downtown, right in the city, is people are open to having spiritual conversations, is what we call them. What they're not open to is being converted. So they'll listen to me talk about my faith in Jesus as long as they know and they trust me enough to know I'm going to listen to them talk about their faith, and I'm not going to try and say my faith is better or more right than your faith. And so it is interesting when we remove the burden of having to convert people. And we say, no, I'm going to speak what I know to be true about Jesus and God and the Bible. And I'm going to do it in a way that's, this is what I know. It's amazing how many people warm up to that. Because I think deep inside all of us, if we're image bearers, deep, deep, deep inside somewhere, no matter how distorted we might be, there is this thing that longs for what only God can give. And so if we can share our faith, and it's just that sharing, not convincing, with other people, I think there is this compelling piece to who Jesus is that people seem to be very interested in.
Getting some fresh insight and perspective on how we can live out our faith in the midst of a changing world, how we can trust God, the unchanging God, even with questions and doubts. We're talking Changing Faith with Pastor Michael Hidalgo, lead pastor of Denver Community Church in downtown Denver. And we're going to continue more in just a moment. I want to talk a little bit about work and how we can tear off a corner of the darkness. We'll get to that and more. We can take your questions as well. And definitely want to have you sign up for a copy of the book. We've got several copies to give away. It's 877-933-2484. 877-93-FAITH. More with Michael Hidalgo coming up. 50 past the hour. Talking today with Michael Hidalgo, who's written a great new book called Changing Faith, Questions, Doubts, and Choices About an Unchanging God. Michael's lead pastor at Denver Community Church talking to us today. Got some copies to give away at 877-93-FAITH. You can sign up for that. Michael, just talking before the break about, you know, people are open to spiritual conversations, not so much about conversion. But I was interested, speak to those who maybe are you know, content to know about Jesus but not really know him. And what do you say to that kind of passive interest?
Yeah, I think it's leaving conversation open. I know one of the things, pieces of feedback that I get, my wife works in a at the hospital, and so we have a lot of relationships with people that she works with. And one of the conversations we get, I get all the time, is it's really cool to talk to a pastor and not always have to talk about your work. And so it sounds like a little thing, but just for people to know, hey, you can be with me and I'm not going to try to convert you. I want to know about your kids. I want to know about your job. I want to know about your interests. I want to talk about sports if that's your thing. And so I think what happens is we're when I talk about being conversion focused, like we have to get them to a certain point. But if we're relationship focused, like I don't have a desired point to get me and my wife to. Like I just want to love her really well today. And so can we say that same thing for people who don't believe in Jesus and ultimately leave their life in the hands of God, continue to pray for them, continue to love them, but ultimately say, no, I'm going to trust God with them.
You reference Bono, and I know you've had some work with the One Campaign and Malaria No More, and he used a phrase about just tearing off a corner of the darkness. Talk a little bit more about that and how, you know, we can have an impact that way as well, not just with words but with actions.
Yeah, it's interesting. Most people would say Bono's the lead singer of U2, but Bono would say, no, I'm an advocate for the world's poorest. And so, you know, the question is, are you an accountant? Or are you somebody who helps others have integrity with money? Like those are two very different things. And so I write a chapter called From Toil to Work. And it's interesting that when God creates the man and the woman, he brings them to the garden to work it and care for it. And the word work is the same word that's used for worship, for priest's work in the temple. Toil is the word that we see as anxiety and pain. And so I think, like, I hear so many people like, oh, I hate my job. And that's toil. I hate it. It's misery. It's terrible. Work is the thing that you do, the thing that I do that gives me life and energy. And in doing so, brings life and energy to other people. And so, like, I talk about my friend Pamela. She's an attorney here in town. But the way her and her husband live their life is so compelling. They rent out a room in their house just so they can bring people traveling through Denver to their dinner table. She works, uses some of her time as an attorney to work for those who are some of the poorest people in Denver. She loves theater and has a background in it. So she joins at least one play every year just so she can bring life and love and the peace of Jesus to the theater company where she works. I mean, so there's, you look at her life and go, okay, she's bringing like the life of Jesus so many places. But you could also say, oh, she's an attorney. And I think that's the question we should ask ourselves. Like my friend Ken is an accountant, but he gives tons of time to helping us at our church work well with our finances and create systems that have accountability and integrity to them because he's passionate about the people of God having like using money well. Him and another guy teach a finance class helping people budget and steward and give. And so it's that question of, like, what are you passionate about, and is that passion serving other people? And I think when you look at back to Bono, you look at him, is he passionate about music? Of course he is. Is he a great performer? Sure. Does he write good music? Sure. But he's really passionate about using what he's been given to help others who've been given very little survive and then go beyond survival to thrive.
You've had the opportunity to do that with the One Campaign and Malaria No More. Just maybe just say a word about that. I mean, as a church, what did that do to your church to have that kind of, you know, a bigger scale activity?
Yeah, we were able to create a malaria campaign that was, you know, throughout the Denver metro area, reached about 500,000 people. And through that, we were able to provide enough malaria nets in sub-Saharan Africa to cover 300,000 people. And what that did is it helped people first remember and become aware that we're not the only people that are alive in this world. There's people who have needs that we can't even imagine. But it also woke more people outside of our church in the city up to, oh, wow, there's this group of people who follow Jesus that actually care about global things and care about things that are important. And the beauty of it is that not only it made people aware of the needs in our world, but it made people aware of this Christian faith community and provided a lot of opportunity for us to have an amazing amount of questions and conversations and see people who would never have come to church join with us in what we were doing in the city.
Michael, we've got about 3 minutes left or so, and the question's too big to probably handle that, but I'm thinking there may be someone listening today that, you know, when we're working through hurts or disillusionments or anger, and maybe, you know, we think God is to blame, that's really, I know, kind of at the heart of the book, Changing Faith, dealing with questions, doubts about an unchanging God. What's your encouragement to those that are maybe angry today?
Yeah, first I'll say, I can say truly say I'm deeply sorry if you're listening and you're at a place where you can't forgive. I've been there. I've walked through it. I grew up abused and had to work through deep pain and wounds. And the first step was discovering that we serve a God who suffers with us. God didn't wave a magic wand over the world and just do away with pain. God sent his son Jesus to suffer with us, to say, I know how you feel. So I think that's the first thing. I think the second thing is having the courage to name it. It took me a long time to ever say that I was abused because I was embarrassed and I wanted to look like I was okay. But to name it and to name it fearlessly, to name it with people that you can trust, and to not think that forgiving means you go back to the place where your wounds were so that you can have more wounds added to you, but that in working toward forgiveness, you don't forget that you also need to work toward your own healing. And then I think when it comes to forgiveness, so many people say, I tried to forgive and it didn't work. It took me years and years and years to forgive my dad. And the first time I ever prayed for my dad, I did it through gritted teeth. And I'm not kidding. After I prayed for him the first time, I said out loud, by the way, I didn't really mean that. So I remember the first time I actually prayed for my dad and I meant it. And it was over a year. So there is those things of, are you willing to be honest? Are you willing to acknowledge that God is one who suffers with you? Are you willing to go in it for the long haul? And if we are, I think there's hope for us who've been hurt.
A good way to wrap up our conversation. Good insight and encouragement today from Michael Hidalgo, who's lead pastor of Denver Community Church. It's a large church right in the middle of Denver. And he's written a wonderful book called Changing Faith, Questions, Doubts, and Choices About an Unchanging God. If you missed part of the program, you'd like to hear it again, pass it on to a friend, that'd be recommended. Go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and click on the Connecting Faith show page. We'll post the interview right after the show.